This business is like a giant game of chess, right? This is not checkers. So there's a lot of things that come up, right? In between all the cool deals and the nice deal structures and the negotiations, there's a lot that comes with that. And yeah, a lot of it's painful, a lot of it's weird, and it's unfamiliar territory. So I wish somebody had pulled us aside and had this conversation with us, when we first started.
So today we're covering forms of legal distress, and it can come in many different ways. And we'll cover from like either from our personal experience or from what we've heard on how to deal with it. Please reach out to a lawyer and attorney and specialty use cases. This is just our opinion of the matter and how to deal with certain situations. So we have a huge list of things. We're going to cover each one of those. If anybody has any questions, please put it in the chat. Our whole goal of doing this is that we think there's a not necessarily a of recession, but there's troubled times coming ahead and it's gonna affect a lot of people. So if you know how to help people, or at least know what the basics are, you can help people do better. And if hopefully people listen to this later, we're gonna release this as a podcast episode by the end of the year. So this is another thing that, like I said, we're trying to help educate people on the ugly side of real estate, because everybody it's all sunshine and rainbows, but till you get sued. So first on our list is demand letters. Demand letters are usually a preliminary communication expressing intent to take legal action. Anthony, what's your opinion on demand letters? And then I'll hop after you.
I know there's a lot of good jokes about them.
There's a lot of good jokes about them.
I think once you cross that line though, yeah, you better be ready to go all the way because they're pretty offensive.
They're very offensive. It's kind of like if you ever get served a demand letter, it's one of those things where like, be ready to go to war. I mean, at that point, if you're ready to serve somebody a demand letter, be ready to go to war. There's a lot of things that can be resolved in other ways, but usually having a lawyer draft a demand letter will cost you like 200 to 5,500 bucks, and you'll get an answer, but you might not like the answer. Right, Anthony?
Yeah, usually the answer is unless you have somebody that's well, I guess it really depends on who's on the other side of that letter, right? If it's a normal person that might not have access to a lot of capital, maybe they're not super business savvy, demand letter works pretty well. But if there's somebody who is well capitalized that's been in business for a long time, you send them the demand letter. Yeah, you better be prepared to go in heavy on some legals, and it adds up quick.
So one thing I'll say to that too, if you're serving somebody a demand letter, be sure you understand what the other person on the other side of that thing is. I'm gonna 100% reiterate that, 100% agree with Anthony on that one. If you serve somebody a demand letter that is gets those all the time, or they know how to deal with it, you might not want to serve them a demand letter. You're not gonna like the result. On the other side, if it's somebody inexperienced and you can kind of maneuver them and you know they're inexperienced, the demand letter is gonna solve your problem pretty fast and in a hurry. So it has its use cases, but make sure if you're the one doing it, make sure you know who you're doing it to, is the main thing. It outlines grievances and demands and specific remedies that they're requesting. And any attorney will take your $500 to write a demand letter, because it doesn't mean anything. It's almost comical. To some people, they're a little insulting, but it's almost it doesn't mean anything in most cases. And it's kind of our demand letter. Anybody else, you want anything else to the demand letters, Anthony, on that one?
I'm coming. I'm responding in the group chat right now. Somebody's acting, a buyer's acting funny. So I'm like, yeah. So I was like, here's how you respond to that. Usually gonna come in as a referee sometimes. No, I think that's pretty much it for demand letters. Yeah. So if somebody does something in business and you feel some type of way and you want to take them to you want to take legal action, that's usually where the demand letter is kind of the first step. Just you gotta use them carefully and yeah, like I said, that starts the communication usually. So now, whoever you send that demand letter to, you're probably going to end communication with that person now. So you're not texting them or calling them anymore, asking them, "Hey, where's my money?" and et cetera. Now it's going to be your attorney communicating with their attorney. So you kind of cease communication at that point. So you got to be careful.
All right, next we're going to jump into a little we're going to jump into the lawsuits, which I think is kind of behind demand letters. If you serve somebody a demand letter, be ready to file a lawsuit. The lawsuit forms legal proceedings initiated by one party or against another. It involves filing a complaint and legal responses, discovery, and potential trial. Now, if you're going down this road, be sure you're ready to go down it, because this is a long road. A lawsuit can last a year to 5 years. I have a cousin, my wife's cousin, she's been through a lot. She's gone through a lawsuit right now for 3 years. The attorneys drag out, the companies drag out, the lawyers charge by the hour. It's going to get really expensive. It's going to take a long time, and make sure it's worth it. They call it worth the squeeze. If it ain't worth the squeeze, don't even do a demand letter. Don't even do a lawsuit, because you're just gonna. It's most time it's ego. If you're gonna do a lawsuit, there's a lot of ego in it, and it, or it has to be worth a lot of money to do the lawsuit as a whole. Any other lawsuits, Anthony?
Just that yeah, they can drag out, they can kill your deal, they can kill your time. So like, oh, I'm gonna sue them so I can get my money. Like, it doesn't work like that. You might never get the money. You might spend it all in the attorney fees of what you were gonna make for the profit anyway. And chances are, yeah, let's say you might be found like negligible or something, like you did something terrible along the way too that you forgot or messed up, and you might end up owing damages, right? And owing money. So yeah, you get countersued, and then it's just a big ball of wax. So you gotta be sure you want to step into that mud before you go there.
James, to answer your question, we're not going to bring up any relevant stories to us because some are still ongoing, and you're not supposed to talk about your cases that are ongoing. So we right now we have three lawsuits going right now. For different reasons. So there's definitely a time and place to do it. To give you the
I'll
point.
tell you. Go, go,
Go
go,
ahead.
go. Sorry. No, I
I
was
was
gonna
gonna
say one
say
thing one thing I wanted to mention is that when we first started this Hivemind, we'd get on Clubhouse, and that's where we started doing our first meetings, right? It wasn't Zoom yet. It was just Clubhouse all the time. And we were talking about like building out this company, what it would look like moving into the future as we continue to grow and scale. And Daniel and myself have never scaled a company like this, right? So don't get us wrong. We do weird things every day that we probably shouldn't do because we're still learning, but we're getting advice from high level people who are, kind of they are already where we're headed. But we talked about this in the very beginning, is that we would have like a certain percentage of our business that would go straight to a legal fund, right? Because we knew that the more business you do over longer distance and time, yeah, you'll find yourself in court.
the bigger you get, the more target you put on your back, where people will just sue you just to sue you to try and get anything you have. So, the bigger you get, the more people target you. So, like people, companies like Walmart and these big conglomerates, they have literally lawyers on retainer just to handle all their cases. And there's lawsuits left and right, probably a new lawsuit every day. So,
No, they'll have lawyers on staff. Like they like
they have
work for the
lawyers on
company full
staff.
time.
Exactly. So, the bigger the company, the bigger you get, the more you're going to have to spend on legal. It's just going to be a cost you're going to have to eat when you, as you get bigger, because people are going to sue you. You're going to have to sue people. It goes a lot of different ways. So, like some of the losses that we're dealing with is we're suing sellers for specific performance for not coming to the closing table. So there's different situations that call for it, and both those deals that are going are really good deals. So we're not going to let them go. And we know if we go all the way to trial, we're going to win. So if you know you're going to win, that's the other thing too. Depending on the situation or case, you have really good standing that you're going to win. That's where you want to go into a lawsuit.
I want to touch on specific performance too. And in this case, we gave the seller a bunch of money up front and they didn't show up to closing. So yeah, we stuck our neck out for them, and they got us, or they tried to get us, but it's not gonna work out in their favor. They've already agreed to sell to us again anyway. But yeah, something I was gonna mention about specific performance, that's something that everybody on this call needs to be careful about, is if you just go and lock up a property and then you try to sell it and it doesn't work out and you need to cancel. If you're dealing again with the seller who's savvy, who has money, who's been in real estate for a long time, they can sue you, right, for specific performance for not closing on that contract. So that's why me and Daniel have never taught volume, right? We've never told anybody in 5 years to go out and go get 50 contracts a month, and all these everybody's talking about scale, 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 volume, volume, volume. And me and Daniel were like, hey man, we've done 10 deals this year, right? We're not embarrassed to say, we've been saying it for years, because we buy carefully, right? We do stuff very carefully. You can't just go and not perform on contracts. You're going to get sued sooner or later. You can get away with it a bunch of times, but it'll catch
It'll definitely catch up to you.
you.
So,
No,
thank you, Frank.
it's me. Not only that, but when people try to lock up a whole bunch of deals and then file memos on all of them, that's a no, big no-no. You
Yeah.
can get sued real quick.
So there's a lot of reasons why you can sue and can be sued. I mean, you can sue over anything. So, being sued is just going to happen, especially if you've been in business for any significant amount of time. You're going to get sued or have to sue somebody. That's just going to happen. I remember one of my first, it was a friend of mine. I did him a favor in trucking, and he owed me like 6 grand. He still owes me 6 grand. I'm never gonna, I mean, it's nothing worth this. Assume over 6 grand isn't worth it. So sometimes you just gotta let it go, and it is what it is. It's a lesson learned. but sometimes it's not even worth suing. So you gotta weigh the balance on which is it worth it or not. We're gonna jump into foreclosure next. Foreclosure is when you stop making payments and the bank or lender comes in and forecloses on you. It's gonna happen. I mean, we've heard about foreclosing on multifamily units, a lot of them from a person in Houston. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen. It happens very often. So foreclosure, it's one of those things where if you can't afford it, you bought a bad deal. Sometimes it's better just let it go. Don't fight the foreclosure. You can always bounce back from foreclosure. I think this is one of the big things about this call, is that no matter what happens, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. You can always, the knowledge you gained, even though you made a bad decision, you might have lost your property in foreclosure, you can still come back from that and be a good investor. One of our students we talked to, he lost everything in 08. He had to repay all his investors back and then some, and then he's borrowing from them again. So when stuff like that happens, you just got to bite the bullet sometimes and face the repercussions, and then you know you can use the knowledge you gain from that to excel and do better.
Yeah, I think this just goes right along with cutting dead weight. So no matter what, if you're investing in any respectable volume, you're going to end up having, maybe bought something that you shouldn't have bought, overpaid for it, didn't work out the way you wanted it to work out. A lot of people hang on to stuff because they're waiting for it to sell in a year, 2 years, 5 years, so they can get their money back, right? But sometimes that opportunity cost is going to kill you. So you say, hey, I bought this thing for 100. I thought it was going to be worth 150. It's worth 80. I'm never going to sell it. So I want my full 120. I know that's what it's worth. But it might make sense just to dump that thing, grab your 80, and then throw it into something else and double it somewhere else, right? Instead of just waiting and waiting and waiting. So yeah, I think that kind of goes hand in hand with foreclosure. I think that's why people get foreclosed on. They hang on to stuff that they know they shouldn't have hung on to. Yeah, so if you get into a bad deal, no problem. You just get right back out. Yeah, identify a better deal, liquidate your asset, and move into the next. You know, that's how I would play. I'm not telling you guys what to do or how to invest, but I'm just saying that would be the move there to avoid foreclosure.
And this is one of those things where we've helped the lady out of foreclosure this year. She had a land deal. We helped out of foreclosure. So like, there's different ramifications where you can step in as a problem solver to help facilitate those. But sometimes it might hit you where you're being foreclosed on. So it's not necessarily a knock against you. Stuff just happens and it is what it is. You just got to take it on the chin and keep it moving. So
they tell you how to save a foreclosure, right? So you come in, you're assuming somebody else's liabilities, right? So let's say they have a building, there's a business in there, it's getting foreclosed on. You come in, you're going to save the day, you're going to buy the thing, but you can also assume that company's debt, right? So maybe you say, hey, I want the building, but I don't want the company. Like, let the company crash and burn, but I'll take the building, right? I'll save the building, but I'm not saving the company. So that's another thing to consider in a situation with a foreclosure. You're assuming everything about that property. So something to think about.
Yep. Bankruptcy. So bankruptcy is when you, it's a legal status indicating an individual entity cannot repay debts. This one, I have an example. I've never gone through bankruptcy myself, but I met Pace when I first started my business. I went to meet Pace and I was in Phoenix. And Phoenix is telling me he used to be a contractor that would flip homes for other investors. And he was doing $1 million in revenue a month, which is a lot of houses. It's a lot of houses, a lot of crews. It's a lot of
Pace was?
Pace was, yes.
Oh, that makes sense. Why he just instantly built this big, giant, massive community in a few years. If he was already running an organization big enough, because in construction, $1 million a month, guys, that's ungodly. Like sometimes my company would do that a year, right? Or every 6 months. And I had a phenomenal time and made plenty of money. So $1 million a month, that's a tremendous organization.
So
I think he was doing rehab work for homebusters.
Dude, that is crazy. That's if that at rehabbing houses, $1 million a month. I mean, that you're talking about doing like maybe hundreds of houses a month, at least dozens. That's a tremendous amount of work. And that's a lot of people moving.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of personnel.
So and this is from Pace. I think we said it on podcast, so I'm not sharing anything he hasn't shared publicly, but he had two of his big investors. They literally filed bankruptcy on him and they each owed him $500,000. Which means he couldn't collect that debt. Once they filed bankruptcy, he couldn't collect that debt. So essentially he lost $1 million and he just shut his company down after that. Just because the people, personnel, the jobs, all the assets, you're like, I mean, at that point, like that's takes you a long time to recover from that. So he just shut it down. So bankruptcy, it's an option for people, but it could affect you too if you're a lender. I mean, me and Anthony, we talked to a lender earlier this year, and he was talking about how the lender was lending to other investors and they filed bankruptcy on them and it tied up the property for months because it was going through a bankruptcy and had to wait till it clears. So if you become a lender at some point, understand that if that borrower files bankruptcy, it could hold up your asset and your property that you're lending on in limbo for a long time. So there's double sides of that. Whether you are filing bankruptcy or need to file bankruptcy, or somebody files bankruptcy that you're doing business for, I mean, anything that you did for them is just gone. Filing bankruptcy, it can affect you for like 5 to 7 years. So there's some certain points where it may be the best option for you. And this is where you talk to a bankruptcy attorney. Every situation is going to be different. Where you might need, it might make sense for you to file bankruptcy. They can't take your car, personal vehicle, and can't take your personal home, but everything else, LLC or not, is up for grabs when they file bankruptcy. Here's another bankruptcy tidbit. Bed Bath & Beyond, they filed for bankruptcy a few months ago. The bankruptcy would come in and sell off all their assets. So the reason why I know the story is because I read an article online or something that somebody bought Bed Bath & Beyond's website and email list. And it was Overstock, because Overstock has similar products and
How
services.
much did they pay for that?
It was like 5 million or something like that.
Oh my goodness, that's the play right there,
They
dude.
bought their list and they bought their website. So now people were getting hit with Bed Bath and Beyond like thing, even though they're in bankruptcy, but it was just a faux company that was using their name to sell more products because they already had all the traffic. Imagine Bed Bath and Beyond's online traffic per month of SEO that they've been building for the last 10, 15 years. Like it's still worth something even though it's bankrupt. So somebody bought that asset and was still selling products and services through it.
I think that's something that nobody's thinking about, in the business world, is the digital assets, right? And that's the most valuable part. Like having a mailing list like that from a, multi-million pushing to a $1 billion company, if you can get their email list, I mean the retail value of that email list, like if you auctioned it off somewhere online, it could be worth more than the buildings they own. Right? Somebody might be willing to buy that email list. Like imagine getting access to Amazon's email list, right? Or Walmart's email, you know what I mean? Like, it'd be insane. That's a real asset. And then you're going to start to see this over the next several years, is that people start to identify that digital assets are worth more than physical assets, right? So we're playing in real estate. We love physical assets. It's the best way we know how to move capital right now. But you're going to see moving into the future that digital assets are worth way more than anything physical.
And one thing I'll say to that with your digital assets, if you wanted to become some type of influencer, or if you're listening to this and you have some type of audience, building your list is so important. I realized this, I think really early on, I think I heard it somewhere, so I've been really focusing on building my list. So like even us, I take high priority to collect people's information just because the building that client list or potential client list, it builds communities like this. Everybody here came off a client list in some way, shape, or form. I didn't know Frank before he came join the Hive Mind, and Frank's here, So everybody here came off some type of list, some way, shape, or form. So it's not a bad thing to say I'm building a list or building my list. It's just one of the things that you gotta take into consideration when you're building an audience. And this is one thing we're building our list for our buyers and sellers. I mean, it's crazy. We're trying to build our list that way too. So your data is important. Next, we're going to jump into judgments. Judgments are fun. So let's say your lawsuit, let's jump back to this is on the lawsuit angle again. If you file your demand letter, you go through the lawsuit, you win your lawsuit, and now you get a judgment. What is a judgment? So a judgment is a court order decision determining the rights and obligations of parties involved. It's you essentially have let's say you sued a guy for $100,000, and now you get a judgment of $100,000. What if the guy doesn't have it? Well, you have a judgment against him for $100,000. The next topic is garnishments. So you can use that judgment to get garnishments against that person. So I don't know if you know somebody, or it's almost like a child support. I mean, we can jump into judgments, and I mean, judgments are pretty easy, but you can jump with garnishments. So a garnishments is a percentage of wages withheld until the debt is satisfied. So they kind of go hand in hand. We'll kind of cover them both together. I learned a lot about judgments just because when I was going through business, I learned a lot about debt and how debt operates. So we're going to jump into credit cards here in a second too. But debt operates is if they can get a judgment against you, they can A, go to your job, B, go to your bank, or C, what's the third option? Or they can find some other way to collect, but usually those two are the main options that people go through. They either go to your bank and do a garnishment, from Adversary Finance on Clubhouse. That's awesome. So they can go to your bank and garnish your bank account, or they can go to your job and garnish it directly from your paycheck. There's a lot of different ways they do that. And it's usually a percentage of your available balance, or a percentage of your check that comes in. So like,
Taxes
go ahead, Junior.
and your taxes.
Oh, and your taxes. There you go. I knew it was another one. Yeah, they take it off your taxes. They'll take your tax return. Yeah.
I got a funny story about having debt against you like that.
Yep, go ahead.
I got some college loans out. I went for anatomy and physiology 1 and 2, aced everything. My construction company took off, so I ran with that. But I never finished paying back my student loans. And then, my 20s, I got a job selling timeshare. And it was like a W-2 job plus commission, right? You can make big commissions. That's how I met Michael Suarez. Mike Flores is on here. I met a bunch of my best friends there at that job, and we stayed friends forever. But know this, but they sent me a letter like, congratulations, you paid off your student loans. I was like, what? How? They were garnishing my wages the whole time I was at that job, and I never even noticed
You never
it.
take
Like,
your pay stub?
thank you. No, I would, but it was like, this is going to that, it's going to that. I didn't pay, because that wasn't how you made the bulk of your money. The bulk of your money came from the commissions. So that's all I ever looked at, was like, hey, how much, what was the big check, right? The little stuff, nobody checked on that. It's like federal taxes, all that, whatever, whatever, whatever. And yeah, I paid off my student loans. I never even knew. Never felt it.
That's crazy. That's well, good for you. You paid off your student loans.
Was proud of
Oh.
myself too. That's the only time I've ever had a real job.
He's like, I need to
It was
find somewhere else. I can't afford that, you
yeah. Yeah, so 43. Yeah, that's the only, I think I had that job for like 2.5 or 3 years. And that's like really the only time I've ever worked for a company in my life. Always been an entrepreneur.
That's crazy. This is one of those things where if you understand how it works, debt changes hands very frequently. And if you've ever been in debt in some way, shape, or form, a lot of it is it's
Can we talk
traded.
about debt, Daniel?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. So
So
there's a
look,
great
everyone
there's
wants assets, assets, assets. Me and Daniel, all we care about is debt, debt, debt.
a there's a great video that breaks down debt. If you look up John Oliver, he's a comedian. He did a segment on debt. It is amazing. At the end of it, it's kind of spoiled that he bought like a huge amount of debt, and just he forgave it all. But the thing is it was like $10 million worth of debt or something, or $1 million worth of debt. I forgot how much money it was, but he bought it for like pennies on the dollar. Like he bought it was like $1 million worth of debt, and he bought it for like 20 grand or something like that. And then he just sent them all a letter that he forgave the debt. So the longer the debt becomes further unpaid, the cheaper it becomes. So there's a statute of limitations on debt of 7 years, and if you have a debt after 7 years, if it's not federal, I think it falls off. Like credit card debt and any type of debt
Most
or liens. Go, Frank.
student loans cannot be forgiven,
Yeah, student loans too. But
thanks
like,
to a rather communistic government of ours.
I was going to say, hey, give it a couple more months. That'll be the last thing he does right before the election.
to get the vote. We're not talking about politics here. Debt is one of those things that is traded hands frequently. I just sent Anthony a video yesterday about debt, how there was a guy buying corporate debt, and then he would restructure it, and he made millions buying debt. I mean, there's a lot of ways to make money on debt. There's a way, if you understand how it operates and how it works, it's not something to be scared of. It's actually 100% leverageable.
Let's talk about this real quick. And then we'll go on to the next. We don't want to beat the dead horse, but look, let's say you go out tomorrow and you negotiate a phenomenal deal on a $10 million ranch, 0% down. Boom. In one day, whatever your percent down was, now you have $9 million in debt to your name. That's powerful. That's crazy powerful.
Are you not going to jump in that more?
No, that was it. Like, what else do you want to know? Like,
You're going to leave
you
us
can have a
hanging with the rest?
You can get a loan for $10 million tomorrow, and I'll just go do that a bunch of other times. Next thing you know, you got $100 million in debt to your name. That's powerful, dude.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
mic drop. There's nothing
Leverage.
else to tell.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Then you
So,
could take, yeah, you could take that debt. You could take a loan against it. You can crowdfund it. You could, I mean, damn, you got $10 million. Use your imagination.
This is one thing where if you get some type of debts, who here has had an outstanding credit card, and you got a letter in the mail and says, "Oh, take." Frank got his hand up. I know some other people got their hands up, but they just don't want to raise their hand. For James, there you go. I see you. You've gotten something in the mail and it says, "Hey, restructure your loan. pay it off in 60 months of this amount, or one payment with a 10% discount. Veronica, I see you in the chat. It's gonna offer you some type of discount to pay off your debt. The reason why is because they bought it discounted, and the people that collected, the debt collectors, they buy that cheaply, and then they try and collect the debt, and that's how they make money. So let's say you have $10,000 worth of debt. The credit card company may not want that on their books, so they'll sell that to a debt collector. A debt collector might buy that for 2 to 3 grand. And I don't know what the rates are buying debt at, and it depends how old it is. Let's say hypothetically they buy it for 2 or 3 grand. They'll try and collect 7 or 8 from you, and they'll work on that debt collecting for years, trying to collect that 7 or 8 from you. As soon as you say, "Yeah, let's pay off this debt and restructure it to 60 months," you've now signed a new agreement with them as the debtor to pay off that debt for the next 60 months. Whereas if you had a statute of limitations of that 7 years, essentially, it kickstarts it all over again.
That's what I was about to say. It starts over again. What to say? Yeah.
Starts all over again. So, there's consult and do things the way you want to do it, but there's different ways you can manage that debt. And all the credit card debt is federally insured, so the credit card didn't lose money. It's just an opportunity for the debt collector to make money. And technically, you don't owe them as the debtor. They just bought your debt. Until you sign an agreement with them that you're paying them, that debt is kind of in limbo because you only owe that debt to the debt it was originally borrowed from, or essentially that gave it to you. Edward says, look up FCRA and FCRS. Diego asks, how do you feel about leveraging the equity of a property to buy other properties? Is it a good or bad idea? I think it's a great idea as long as you manage the risk. We've done that to get money to buy properties. We'll leverage the property we have free and clear. It's 100% feasible. It depends on your risk level. If you can use that equity in the asset to leverage the capital. Anthony, did you watch that video I sent you of Casey yesterday? Sorry.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, Anthony. Yeah. Did you watch the video of
Sorry, I
Casey?
just walked through the front door, dude. What was the question?
Did you watch the video from Casey yesterday?
Dude, I have not had a chance to watch it, but I know I need to. Casey's an animal.
Okay, so to kind of put this into perspective, Casey talks about creating, you have a property free and clear, and I'll break it down to you. You can create your own loan against that property, even if it's fake. It might be a James has a property free and clear. I'm like, hey, James, can I put $50,000 worth of debt on your property? Let's create a note. And then I might use that note as an exchange to buy something else. So that's what that video is. I'll put the video in the chat for everybody here. But you can, if somebody owns property free and clear, and the way Casey puts it, if you check out Casey Miracle on Twitter, he talks about creating temporary debt that you might need it for 6 months at a high, at 5-6% interest. You create that note, it's temporarily there, and you move it somewhere else. So you can do a lot of amazing things with debt.
Look, guys, if anybody in this room thinks they're pretty good at real estate, go watch that guy so you can be humbled. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, go watch that video. It'll be humble real quick. So, debt is very, it's very underrated. And there's different ways to manage it and manage it properly, I guess, that it can be a huge asset to your business, and you can buy it and make money on it. That's what you want to do. I'm trying to find the link for James here. Next, we're going to cover credit card debt, which I think we covered a little bit here. But credit card debt is unsecured debt. It's not tied to any asset. And failure to repay can lead to legal actions, including lawsuits. And then you make a judgments, garnishments, and have to renegotiate that settlement. So there's a credit card debt, you can get a lot of it. When I was, I found the link for you, James. Here's the link. When I first got into business, I was really big into credit and credit cards, and I was really working hard to like build my credit card utilization, not my credit card utilization, my credit availability. I got it up to like 300,000 just by managing credit cards and building out credit lines. I'll tell you a really quick way. Like we're talking about distress, but I'll tell you a quick way to get your credit back into good standing for everybody here. Is if you have friends, family, a wife, somebody you know and trust, and they have good credit, what they can do is they can make you an authorized user on their account, and whatever credit card availability they have essentially gets transferred over to you. They don't actually have to give you the card. They'll issue them a card, like if you have your authorized user, but they don't ever have to give it to you. So I did this with one of my family members, and I've done it for people too, friends and family. So if you have friends and family, your credit's not that good, and you know somebody that does have good credit, essentially add you or them as an authorized user, and then it extends your credit to them, and you get their credit essentially in a way. So it's a good way to build your credit as a whole for everybody here. Hope you that's a good tip about credit and credit cards. But I've done that for a long time. It's a good way to build credit. But if your credit's bad, don't do it, because then you hope it ruins other people's credit. Yeah, not doing that. Don't trust nobody. And that's fine. Maybe somebody trusts me, maybe somebody trusts you, and they'll do it for you in exchange. But there's different ways to do that. Find a good friend, make a friend. I know I did this with my wife. My spouse is a friend that I trust. So I did this with my wife. So when I was building my credit cards, I would get a credit card in her name, have me as authorized user, and then I would get a credit card in my name at her as authorized user, and we kind of build each other's credit at the same time. Yep. Frank says my wife had did that also, boost her credit like crazy. Crazy little hack to build your credit, but definitely try it out. What are the main differences between business and personal credit? I think you cover personal guarantees. Yeah, I do later. Okay. So business and personal credit card, they're tied to your business, and one's tied to your credit card. Some credit card companies will make you sign a personal guarantee to receive that credit for your business. It depends on the business. If you check out like credit card hackers or whatever, or there's a lot of people that do like their niches credit cards, they'll tell you like all the tips and tricks. Hey, you can get a don't hold me to this, but you can get like Capital One that's not a personal guarantee if your business for your business if you get this certain credit card. Like there's a couple of hacks. If you check out those like online forums or videos and target those people, they'll tell you all the little hacks and tricks to get bonuses, bonus points, and stuff that's not tied to your personal credit. Yeah, but there's a lot of hacks for that. But
Please
definitely.
go over that, Daniel, because I have a lot of people that I've tried funding them for, certain deals, and some of them are like, "Well, go through my business credit because my personal credit sucks," or "Go through my personal credit because my business credit sucks." And I'm just like, "Dude, just get it together, man. Find a balance."
So, business credit's really hard to build. I know it's you can build it through
It
credit
is
lines.
hard. Yeah.
You can build it through credit lines, and you can build the relationship using your personal credit. It's just really hard to get business credit. I saw a video where a guy he got business credit, and then he went and bought like a bunch of cars through the dealership using his business credit. It's crazy. You can do a lot of crazy stuff with it. Your personal credit's a lot easier, in my opinion, to manage and build. Business credit is very, very difficult. Go ahead, Diego.
Just one tip I wanted to share. I've
Absolutely, go
had
ahead.
some luck with so building business credit. Like Daniel said, it can be a little tough. I've managed to get a few business credit cards going by just opening a business bank account and letting it sit for at least 2 years. Once you hit the 2 year mark and you're actively using the account, you're just a checking account. From what I understand, after the 2 years, it's like you built that relationship with your bank, and that's when I noticed I started receiving a bunch of offers for opening a bunch of business credit cards for my LLCs, and just thought I'd share that out with anybody
No,
since
that, I forgot about that. 100% seasoning. You can buy trade lines that are already seasoned accounts just for that reason. That way you can get business credit immediately. But please look into further into that. Don't take my word for it and don't buy
What do you call that? Trade
it.
lines?
Trade lines.
But interesting.
Trade lines. Look them up. So, go ahead, Junior.
They're trade lines, they're shelf accounts.
Yep, they're shelf accounts.
You can also buy shelf LLCs, shelf C corps, shelf S corps, where they've had work put into them to build up the lines of credit that's available to them. There are companies that sell that, typically in the tens of thousands of dollars, but for what credit's available to them, it's well worth it.
Yep. So there's a whole niche to that. So you can definitely buy trade lines and shelf corporation for that reason. We're going to jump into repossessions. Repossessions are common in auto loans and secured loans, legal process where lender reclaims property borrowed due to defaults. This is like personal property and not like physical property, because physical property goes through foreclosures. Repossessions is more for personal property, RVs, boats, and car loans, stuff like that. Repossessions, it's one of those things like foreclosures, man. It happens. Sometimes you got to restart, get a new car, and if it happens, it happens. I have a friend of mine. He's gotten his car repossessed a couple times, and he's helped people prevent their car from being repossessed. I went to his house a couple months ago, and he had one of his employees had parked his car, their car, in the backyard to prevent it from being repossessed, because it was totally not family, not friends, not anything. So it was just a business relationship that he parked his car there to prevent it from being repossessed. It's crazy. I've seen some crazy stuff with the car repossessions, but it's pretty funny. Not that it's funny, but it's, I have a lot of friends in those stories, and great examples, like Veronica says. I have unique friends. How about that? And like my friends aren't necessarily crazy. I know people that have crazier friends. I'm sure Anthony's got some stories too, but I try and bring an analogy for each one to show it's not that serious. You can bounce back from every one of these.
Thank you, Daniel. Thank you.
That's the big thing. You can bounce back from any one of these. If it happens to you, or it has happened to you, it's okay. We'll get through this, all right? Tax liens. Tax liens are not paying the government from taxes. So us as investors can buy tax liens. Depending on the state, we can buy a tax deed or a tax lien. For everybody here, one of our speakers from our event last year, he's a tax lien investor. I forget the story. Anthony, do you remember the story? He bought like some crazy asset through a tax deed or a tax lien, and he got like a crazy deal. I don't know if you can remember the details in that one.
Not the one that bought all the like the hundreds and hundreds of land defaults or something.
He said a story at the event that I can't remember, that he got like a crazy property through a tax deed. That guy.
I think he bought a tax lien or deed or whatever for like $6K, and the property is worth like $1.5 million or something.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy. So tax liens, go check them out. Pretty interesting. I forget the exact story, but it's pretty crazy.
I can add something to that. Actually, there's a really good book out there that I read. It's called The 16% Solution. It goes all over tax liens and how, by just purchasing a tax lien certificate, and there's only a certain amount of states that allow you to do this. Not every state can do this. Different states have different interest return that you can get by just holding the certificate itself. So let's say there's a house for sale in Florida, which is actually something I tried to do. I went over to Florida, checked out some of these houses, and the tax certificate that you can buy for them. You can buy a tax lien certificate for as little as like $2,000, $4,000. Once you buy that, you get a return of, depending on the state, it can be up to 16% during the time that the tax is not paid. And after so long, if they don't pay the taxes, then with that tax lien certificate, you have the option to purchase the property. You would have to go into some sort of legal battle to do that, but you can get a house for pennies on the dollar with just buying the tax certificate. I don't know if Texas does it, actually, because
they do. Every state does it. It's just it might be a tax lien or tax deed state, but every state does it, and they have different limits. I think Texas is either 2 or 5 years. I can't remember exactly. I know California is 5.
Isn't that what Logan Fulmer does with?
Yeah, Logan's done tax stuff, tax lien stuff, tax deed stuff for sure.
Okay, I think the one I'm thinking is tax lien certificates in particular.
Yeah, they're called different things, but it's all the same thing. It's just called certificates or deeds, depending on the state.
Gotcha.
Not completely. Like yeah, Florida's a lien and deed state. The lien, you've bought the debt at whatever interest rate. and you've got a maximum or a minimum of 2 years that you have to hold it before you can sell it, at which point in time then you can sell the deed and someone can buy it, or you can buy it and own it at that point completely free and clear for the amount that you're into it for. So yeah. But if you buy it, say $200,000 at 14%, the max in Florida is 18%. Say you manage to get the winning bid at, you know, for $200,000 at 14% for a house that's worth $1 million. You've got 2 years that you have to hold it. Then you can sell it. At that point in time, you can petition for the sheriff's office in whatever county it's in to sell it. And you collect all of that money plus the interest, like whatever the total amount is, including the interest, is the default starting bid. So if you want it, you bid whatever and it's yours. And the nice thing is it's yours. So all the money goes to you anyways. So you don't have to worry about coming up with the money if you decide you want it.
Edward says there's retired people that just buy liens just for the returns.
Mm-hmm.
And then Diego says the book is called 16% Solutions in Case, and it's curious, so check that book out. A lot of good info here. Thanks, Diego, for hopping in.
Definitely
go check out Tax Liens.
You got some good info there.
We got, there's a lot of good stuff there. We're gonna jump into collections and wage garnishment limits. They can only take a certain amount of your income whenever you do go to collections or wage garnishments. So it's going to depend on each person. I've heard stories of people that they'll go to collections or they get a garnishment and they'll be like, yeah, I can only afford $5 a week or $5 a month or something like that. And then that's all they get paid. So even you can go through and this is the whole point of, like, if you have to sue somebody or if you're being sued, is that you can go through the whole thing of doing a demand matter, doing a lawsuit and getting a judgment. And then when it comes to collections, you might get $10 a month and they're paying you the rest of their life. So that's why we always say, if you're going through the lawsuit route, make sure you understand what you're going through, because you might not like the outcome, even when it comes down to it. Next thing I'll say is preventative measures. You can do a lot of things depending on what situation you're dealing with. And the cool thing about this is that you're learning this, you can use this for sellers too. If sellers going through a certain situation, you can help sellers through a certain situation. So there's preventative measures to do certain things. Like, I know you can consolidate credit card debts into one loan to put that on, instead of taking it from your personal, it takes it to on like your debt to income. I don't know, there's a whole little strategy with that, but you can do certain things to kind of help relieve the pressure in certain different situations. You might be able to wholesale the property, you might be able to do certain things, but just understand there's a lot of different options. Maybe bankruptcy the options for the seller. You never know. So don't push sellers down certain routes if there's better options available to them. And this is where it comes down to, where if you're dealing with a really distressed seller, sometimes us buying it, their property wholesale, isn't the right thing to do. And that's okay. I think me and Anthony, we've had situations where we've told the seller, like, hey, we're not the best option for you. You can solve this problem doing this certain paperwork. And we're not the person to solve this issue. And there's better ways to do this. So make sure you're doing everything the right way when it comes to the sellers, if you are helping sellers through tough times, and understand that they may not be thinking properly when they're going through this, because to me and you, we're having this candid conversation, but to them, it could be life or death. I mean, this could be disastrous in their personal life, depending on how heavy that burden is. So make sure you're understanding and you're being light-handed and understanding the situation when you are dealing with sellers that are going through this, or friends or family that are going through this. It could be very, they could be getting calls every day. They could be calling family members. They could be leaving mail, very aggressive mail to their doorstep. It can come in a lot of different ways. The debt collectors are ruthless. The garnishments can hurt a lot. Like, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of pain that comes with this. So make sure you're understanding all the ramifications of that. People that are going through this, or if you go through this, it's not something, it's not something fun to go through. Personal guarantees. These are commitments by individuals to personally responsible for a business debt. A lot of credit cards, if you get a credit card or business loan, they'll ask a personal guarantee to sign for that debt if it becomes default. So a lot of commercial loans, they'll have people that just sign for the personal guarantee. just to make sure that there's some type of other repayment if the deal goes south. And it could implicate personal assets if the business can't repay. So this is the other reason why I love creative finance. Anthony, have you ever signed a personal guarantee with a seller? Let's see if he's listening.
I never have, no.
So us by going getting creative financing and seller financing, we never have to do personal guarantees. There's huge incentive, there's huge like ramifications that you don't even realize when you get seller financing. So this is why we go up to seller financing. It's such a huge underrated asset that the sellers give you that ability and you're not doing a personal guarantee. So just understanding that stuff. When you get into the big boy game like storage, personal guarantee. If you're not signing, somebody has to. Right, Frank? Yep, that's just going to happen.
You know, I was going to say that's the power in what we do, guys, is you know, the more legal documents you need, proof of income, when people start looking at your records and your statements, your buying power is dropping, right? So let's say you go to 10 lenders and they say, hey, we want to see all your books. We're going to give you a $2 million loan, right? By the time one of those lenders approves you, then you're done. You're not getting the other 9. But what we do is we'll go out there and give ourselves the 10 loans anyway, right? And go out and leverage all that debt. And we never ask any institution for permission to do so if you're going direct to seller.
Yep. Second position liens, where I'm sending the call, is a priority of liens on assets when multiple loans are involved. Second position liens may have subordinate claims to first position liens in case of default. I did a really cool podcast with Kevin Amosh. It's like, if you look him up, it was probably like a year ago. He did a really cool deal by buying like a third position lien and then paying off the subset liens, and he ended up getting like $500,000 equity just by buying a subset lien. So if you take a second position lien, or if you buy a second or third position lien, you can, there's a lot of implications that come with that. But if you lend on a deal and they put you in second position, just know first position has hierarchy in that property. And it goes in the hierarchy of first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. So there's a lot of nuances and understanding your position in a property if somebody offers you second position. You just got to understand what you're getting. And sometimes second position might be worth it. I know a lot of commercial properties, they create, there might be a first position lien of 70%, and then they'll put a second position lien of the 30% of their limited partners. So there's a lot of different ways to structure deals. The bigger the deals get, usually there's going to be a second or third position liens on the property. So if you are getting into a lien position or you want to buy a lien position, make sure you understand the different types of lien positions and what are the other positions holding and where they're at and their current standing. So I think I covered everything I could think of about legal distress, from real estate, credit cards, foreclosures, demand letters. There's a lot of stuff in there. If you need to dig into certain things, talk to an attorney, talk to a lawyer. If you need to help sellers with this, get a referral for a lawyer or attorney to help these people through these situations, because when people are going through them, they are heavy to carry, heavy to carry. So I hope that helps you become a better investor. And if you know somebody going through it, I hope I can help, you can help them and understand the basics of debt and good, bad debt, what it looks like, ramifications of it.
I got one last one, Daniel, that I've been meaning to find out more about this, and a lot of people have reached out to me with the opportunity, but I don't understand it too well, and hopefully this might be a long shot, but I'm hoping somebody knows about it. Have y'all heard of the term infinite banking, using your life insurance in order to buy properties with that, or take a loan against that to where you're paying yourself the interest, to where you become your own bank? Can we just talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I recommend you do this if you have a lot of capital to invest. It takes a lot of money to kickstart it going, and you have to have capital to lend yourself, essentially. So if you're not well capitalized, it's not even worth it to go down that route. It's one of those things where you take it on when you're ready, but it definitely is a way to, once you already have wealth, it's a way to build wealth even further. You have to overfund your policy. essentially. So if you're not in a place to do that, don't even worry about it. And this is where, like, different people, different times, maybe you'll get there eventually and you might know about it, but it's one of those things where you don't necessarily want to jump in over your head, because a lot of times people will sell you that, oh, you can do this, this, and this, and then they realize what it actually costs to get up and running, and they might start it and not have the funds to even leverage it properly, or it even makes sense. So that's my two cents on that.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate that. That helps.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be well capitalized. That's the biggest thing for those things. It's a good strategy. You got to be well capitalized. Any final thoughts, Anthony?
Nope. Get out there. Go do something. Get somebody on the phone. Make something happen. And then you'll learn all this stuff firsthand instead of just listening to it. But if you're out there getting your hands dirty, you know, then you can learn all this stuff firsthand. But if you're not in the trenches doing it, you're never going to experience it anyway. So I'm just always like, just take action. Analysis paralysis. It's not allowed in this room. Like, you just go out there. I'd rather you go out there and do something completely stupid, and we'll fix it and work our way backwards, than to just continue to not do anything at all. Let's go make some money, guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fail forward, man. If you've never dealt with so many situations, if you've been in business long enough and you're making money long enough, it's going to come up. You're going to have to sue somebody. You're going to get a demand letter served to you. It's going to go one or the other way, and it's just going to happen. So be prepared. Know that it's not the end of the world. Consult an attorney. Talk to somebody who's dealt with stuff like that. If any of you guys get sued for something, let us know. Might be able to help you out. Not that we're going to give you legal advice, but we can tell you who to talk to. Might give you a referral to a lawyer or attorney. You never know. So reach out to your network whenever stuff like this comes up that you don't understand, and somebody might have gone through it prior to you. So they might give you some insights that you might not understand and how to deal with certain situations. So if you do go through troubled times or know somebody who has, definitely reach out, and hopefully this call helps everybody learn something and how to deal and transition through stuff like that. All right. Happy Thanksgiving, y'all. We'll see you on the next Tuesday. Everybody here, thanks for tuning in. I hope you all learned something and are able to take that with you the rest of your life. All right.
Hey, guys, if y'all are in the San Antonio area and you're going to be alone on Thanksgiving, hit me up. Y'all can come meet with us. Have a good one. Take care. God bless you.
Bye.
Hey, if you have any deals you'd like to submit to the Hive Mind and our team, go to hivebc.io. It's actually the Hive Buyers Club. Submit your deals, and we can hopefully dispel your deal for you. Have a great day.